have to write the seven titles of those books on a piece of paper, and the first one to hand them to the MC.
The ball.
Get a free. No, I don't have to be in the right order. So there's only one free drink, not 50. Because you pass them around to each other, you know. I know you love. Well, I feel a bit of an imposter being up here because there's such a great lineup of poets for Avail before me and after me. But thanks anyway to Avail for including me. Has a, to use Donald Rumsfeld jargon, a known unknown, or perhaps a unknown unknown. I'm starting with a surrealist send-up of Ernest Hemingway, one of the most influential writers in modern literature, and when I wrote this some time ago, he was one of my favourites. But that was no reason not to make a bit of fun of him, and also of some aspects of the Spanish character and recent history. As Paul said, this is by way of launching the latest edition of this book, A Magic Little Virus and Other Short Stories, which it has a few extra stories from the original one, if you follow that one. Okay, so it's called The Wine of the Spanish Revolution, and there'll be a slightly abridged version, in the interest of time, not censorship. We lived in a big old wine barrel that year. There were six of us. Paco, myself, the old one, the young one, the formidable old grandmother, as she was nicknamed, and Conejita, or Little Rabbit, as Paco called her. It was crowded and smellsome in that huge old wine barrel, but it was good. We were all there together, and each of us was one of us. It smelled of man's sweat and woman's sweat and old wine. It was good, it was all right. But the sun also rises over the Sierra in the morning. It can get quite hot inside an Andalusian wine barrel then. And boy, that's when it really smells. That morning I woke early. I went out and sat quietly and watched the old grandmother making the breakfast. She was stirring the coffee in a big pot on the pine wood fire with the barrel of her Thompson machine gun, and occasionally spitting into the deep canyon below. And when she spat with great feeling. Buenos dias, I said. And how is the world today, old grandmother? She spat vehemently. Obscenity, she replied. Damn the censorship. And started to oil the barrel of the gun. Listen, unprintable Americano. Your mother was surely an unprintable obscenity. Here hast thou been for 8 months and the bridge is still unblown. She gestured contemptuously down the canyon at the bridge over the river. I drank some coffee and lit a cigarette. That is true, old grandmother, but I have a great novel to write about the Spanish Civil War. She spat contemptuously, a great gobbet of tobacco-stained spit which arced out into the dawn mist over the river rushing in the canyon. This one was a starter for sure. Men without women, that might have been a better arrangement. But then that's all of rabbit. Look, said the old grandmother, even now the fascist hyenas are crossing the bridge in their tanks to murder the brave workers at the front near Red Malaga. And all we hear from you for months, cabrón, is that you are preparing your explosives for the blowing of the bridge. Are you man at all? Perhaps your cojones are of Cordoba clay, she snorted. Only little rabbit knows. She glowered with contempt and drew up the phlegm in her throat. I moved quickly out of the way. With the barrel of the machine gun, she stirred the coffee again, and then spat into it, with great feeling. Rabbit was beside me now. She smiled softly at me with her big brown eyes. I fondled the short, fluffy stubble on her head. It had been shaved by her captors before she had escaped from behind the Franco lines. Other things had happened too, which she didn't want to talk about. That's the reason I felt I had to protect her. She looked at me and I knew she was thinking of the night that had just passed. How was it, little rabbit? Did the earth move? Si, Ernesto, the earth moved when you snored. The old one approached through the early morning. He was carrying the dog in his arms. The dog looked sick. They shot him, the unprintable fascist sons of fascist mothers. The old one wept as he cradled the dog. Nay, old one, I said, it is but the red mange. Then he would die anyway, he said, and threw the poor creature down into the cavern. He was a good dog, the old one laughed. Little Rabbit cursed the old one with a scream of gypsy obscenity. She was fond of animals. It was just after daybreak. It was beginning to rain. The old grandmother was singing couplets, but she cleaned the dried blood from the axe. You know, Americano, we as Spanish, we are always behind our priests, sometimes carrying the church candles, and sometimes carrying an axe. Paco had drunk a good deal of rough wine for breakfast already. He was talking about a fish he had once caught. With ever widening sweeps of his arms, he was indicating how big the fish had been. The old one claimed that he had caught much bigger fish. Like all fishermen, Paco was a goddamn liar, and we had soon gotten tired of the fish, and the old man and the sea. Then the shooting started. It was soon after daybreak. It was raining. It was hell. They got the old one first. He lay writhing in the mud at the edge of the canyon, groaning pitifully. He had been hit in the stomach, the worst type of wound to die from. Hombre, qué dolor. The grandmother became enraged. The old one had been her lover. She stood on the edge of the canyon and directed burst after burst from the Thompson gun at the soldiers lurking in the spiny scrub on the other side of the barranco. Even when they fired back, she was slow to take cover. Eventually, she found a good firing position between two enormous boulders in the shade of some mountain pines. Then she became enraged at the rest of us. No one else felt like fighting. We preferred the quiet life. Remember the words of La Passionaria, compañeros. It is better to die fighting on one's feet than starving on one's knees. No one stirred. Come on, cowards. No pass around. They shall not pass. Up and fight the fascistas, comrades. The young one was trying to get back to sleep. He was not a morning person. The old one was telling Paco to shut up about his big fish or he would shoot him. He also threatened to shoot the old grandmother if she did not stop giving orders. The old one explained to me from my book that this was because he was a good anarchist and he would fight the fascists in his own way and in his own time. Mierda, without taking orders from the Rojos. The Reds wanted to run the show, but how could they possibly succeed in this when so many people considered themselves the individual republics? Even while dying slowly and in great pain, the old one could not stop talking. Now the young one had suddenly woken up. He was cursing roundly while he fired his rifle at random at the huge boulders on the hillside where the shots had come from. You are wasting bullets and also your breath, said the old one. Save your breath for the next life. We are dead men already. Eso es verdad, said Paco. It is true, the tanks will soon be here, and maybe even the Nazi planes. And we have nothing to fight them with. But all one out for the next life, Paco threw up his hands, shrugged his shoulders, and blew a loud raspberry. The young one was digging himself deeper into the dirt, but I jotted notes from my novel and puffed on a big Havana. If we could just hold out till nightfall, we could slip away in the dark, said the young one. Si, compañero, said Paco. And if thy aunt had cojones, she would be thy uncle. Everyone laughed, even the old grandmother. Then they got the young one, he who had always dreamed of becoming a matador, the greatest manolete. It was early in the morning, it was hell. Hijo de la gran puta, cursed the young one. That's the good thing about censorship, he's been used another language. And all my life I had prayed it would be death in the afternoon. Obscenity, I muttered in sympathy, scratching my grizzled beard. I had been looking forward to seeing the young one fighting the bulls in the famous old Plaza de Toros in Ronda, where modern bullfighting had been developed. And then going on a bender in the old town with Orson and Abba and a few other good friends. But such is life and death in the hot Spanish sun. One thing I could never figure out was why the young one and the old one didn't have names, for God's sake. Fascist soldiers were shouting over the canyon, Oiga, bandidos, surrender now. The planes are on the way. If you surrender, nothing bad will happen to you. Paco laughed dryly and shouted that he preferred the bullet to the rope. Then he launched the last remaining grenade from the barrel of the gun. There was an orange flash from behind the rocks on the far hillside, followed by terrible screams and shouts. Red swine, now we will send you all to hell in the name of God and Generalissimo Franco. The soldiers started a long fusillade of machine gun fire. After this, there was a deathly quiet for some minutes. Then they got the old grandmother with a single sniper shot. Before she died, she spat into the canyon with great feeling. She had the wende, the old grandmother. This was a life. War is hell, and here I was in the thick of it, with blood and guts all around me, about to start my great novel. The old one was still lying groaning in the mud on the edge of the canyon. Rabbit pushed him over the edge with her feet. He will die anyway, she said. Besides, he talks too much. Then they shot the wineskin full of holes. It hurt seeing the boat I got shot up. That was hell. This was the worst thing of all, Paco. At one moment to have a nearly full wineskin and then to have an empty one. To have and to have not. The grenade landed right beside Paco. He stopped talking about his fish. No more gestures to exaggerate the size of the fish. His arms had been blown off at the elbows. It had happened as he tried to scoop the live grenade over the edge of the canyon. Farewell to arms, I thought, looking at poor Paco standing there with a puzzled look on his face. No pasarán, he groaned. Viva la República. He fell face forward into the pool of wine beside the shut-up wineskin. He took a few deep gulps of the rough vino tinto before he died. The red wine mingled with Paco's lifeblood, the blood of the Spanish workers, the wine of the Spanish Revolution. That's it, I thought, the title for my new novel. I quickly placed my battered old typewriter on my lap and typed it out. The Wine of the Spanish Revolution. The bullets whistled around us. It was still raining. It was hell. Little Rabbit snuggled close to me from behind, her arms draped around my neck as she watched me typing. The red wine mingled with Paco's lifeblood, the blood of the Spanish workers, the wine of the Spanish Revolution. I stretched and yawned. That was enough for today. I felt tired. I looked down at the tanks and armored cars crossing the bridge below the canyon. If I had just gotten round to blowing that goddamn bridge. A bell began tolling. Tolling, tolling. Ernesto, do you know for whom the bell tolls? Rabbit asked. I always made sure she spoke grammatically. I crawled into the sleeping bag. Damn divino, honey, I yawned. She squirmed into the sleeping bag too. Ernesto, make the earth move. The noise of the bombs and gunfire was deafening. It was hell. The earth moved. Shinnick. When do you get the seventh title? Yeah?
I don't know.
Didn't spoil it. Yeah? Forget them. You want to read them all?
I know there's one right
here,
but
it's... Huh?
The adjudication of the chairman of the unauthorizes
men with Oakland and John Lennon and
E. Yeah.
You have 607.
Yes, the very firm. Had and had not. From Bedford.
Seven.
You got seven, yeah? Okay. Hold on. Got a pint or what do you want? A pint of Murphy's or another drink?
Okay.
What's the deal? What
do you think? But you get 14 for that.
Whatever you want, isn't it? Just look at it. Say you look at. Okay, now, I'm just going to do a few personal poems and one political poem. I know poetry and politics don't mix very well, but I just like it in one moment. The, yeah, I know, I should do it right. I don't see. Okay, the first one is this was published a few years ago, Beach Commerce. The first is called Mother Love, for my mother, of course. You, mother, fed this infant milk and love on your arm. Near the end, you were fed hot milk and whiskey in return. You guided this toddler, protecting from all harm. Your delight in little steps tinged with some concern. Through all the squalls of this growing child, you, mother, were the one who nurtured tender life. You had wise words to protect her from the wild, but had no shield for vicious schoolyard strife. Teen years raging full of hormones, moods, and spots, making life a torment for everyone around. Rebel, with or without cause, this young life's in knots. By the mad climbing walls.
Turn down the sipping sound.
A nice safe job in the bank. House in the suburbs too. The maternal word in the ear. Sure wouldn't that be grand. But for me, it was work to travel. And the thing with booze just grew. Some racial generational thing. I could drink for Ireland. But no disappointment, mother, that I didn't make the grade in career or in marriage. Too dramatic to call it tragic. To misquote Mr. Lennon, while our plans are laid, life is what happens. And aren't your grandkids magic? Many things I'd like to say, and I feel it's not too late. What really matters, mother, is the love that stays, in death as well as life. I feel it and reciprocate. You went gently into that night, but your imprint will not fade. Second poem is for my children when they were much younger. Let's talk about the Irish there, about children and poetry and writing, and how they love to write poems at the age of 8 or 9, and then they get all shy later on. Especially boys, you know. Scorned out of them a second or two. Anyway, have pen, will travel. For my children. To travel space or time, pick up a paintbrush or a pen. Picture, song, story, rhyme. Just dare to begin. I took my pen for a walk, and then it took me instead. It seemed that it began to talk, and I followed where its journey led. It became Aladdin's tune, flying me off to Samarkand, better than a Disney film. Shout Kazam to make it land. Next there was a time machine, flashing to an ancient time. Look out, that mammoth's mane! Fivefold tons of prime. Then, time warping, years ahead. On a science fiction roll, spun right out of my earthly bed, score the galaxy's winning goal. To travel space or time, pick up a paintbrush or a pen, painting photo music rhyme, dare to begin. And funny enough, of all the kids, 3 are either painting, taking very good photographs, or one is a musician and writes his own lyrics. Only one of them became a computer scientist. Interesting. Now, next, don't bother clapping in between. I know it's embarrassing when you don't know whether to clap or form and you think you do it out of politeness. I'll just do 1 or 2 more poems. This is the political poem. Called The Eliminated. Ken Sarawiwa, hanged by a brutal state with shadowy paymasters acting for the rich and great. High over Black Thames mud, far from the oil and the blood, you tried to save the rivers. You're abused of only people from the predators who stalk our world, the crocodile men of power. Taryn Silkwood, you sought to protect the staff in a troubled nuclear plant which feeds the golden calf. A lonely, lethal date with a roadside ditch your fate. Convenient for the company, the documents disappeared. High explosive evidence on toxic men of power. Fernando Pereira, you died when a plastic bomb sank the Rainbow Warrior, sealed your watery tomb in a murky Auckland dock, and the world was left in shock. The terrorists are not terrorists when doing a job for the nation. carrying out their orders from plush salons of power. Petra Kelly, the movement's Joan of Arc, a voice of sanity stifled, for Cain yet one more mark. You had so much more to give. No longer permitted to live. Masters of global, silenced by the network, masters of global city. Suicide, the verdict of the shadow of men of power. Another personal poem. On the death of my father. Something drove me back after that last blazing row to say, no hard feelings, Dad. And I'm grateful for it now. That small, mysterious voice that made me touch your brow the last time I saw you, my father. I wept when I heard the news far away in another place. I never thought I'd weep. But the mysterious mind of race must have its own reasons. Though it's seldom I recall your face, I know we've made our peace, my father. Everyone saw you as a sociable rogue, a great man to the old crack, typical of your land and time. But your sober moods were black, a street angel, house devil. Well, anyone can lose the track, but who am I to criticize? Again, I say, no hard feelings, my father. And the last poem is called The Ballad for a Beloved Uncle. This uncle is actually like a father figure to me, because he was always full of humor, even when not drinking. Anyway. His death has diminished us all to the poet of centuries past. And now the dead has left us to travel free at last, with the body's pinching pain and his family's helpless woe. I'm thinking of those words of that poet of long ago. Ah, the best of us is gone, said one who knew dead well. Not a bit of badness in him, as far as one could tell. A chuckle and a generous grin were seldom far away from lighting up his lived-in face, drive grey from the greyest day. Listen to what friends are saying as the man is laid to rest. Well, we're going to miss him, surely. Ah, yes, one of the best. Great man to the old crack. The rascal really let life rip. Could charm the birds off a bush. Or an orangeman out of his tip. He lived his life at such a pace, you'd think he might have gone, taking his horse over high stone walls. He thought he'd go with his boots on. And dead, well, I can see you now, bone in cap over a face rough and tanned, on your old wooden boat in the Shannon, or with a white-coloured pint in your hand. If at times there was a downside, you learned to hide it well. You showed more sunshine than shadow, though at times you were going through hell. You rode on a roller coaster, a victim of errant enzymes. Family trauma, adolescent shortened, shook by black and tan crime. In the heaven of our childhood, you're putting a grin on the dial of the dourest saint or angel with your pranks and roguish smile. A spirit like yours rides free across dimensions without maps. And who knows, Dev, your rascal, will all see you someday, perhaps. How's time, Mark?
Huh?
Well, if I have time, maybe I'll just start with some.
You do it,
right? Okay, right. It's another bit of black satire, I suppose you'd call it. Orange Ape. I might just jump this because I'll get through it faster. Hey you. No, let me get the text on that. Hey you. Who, me? Yeah, you in the orange jumpsuit. I looked around. Everyone was in an orange jumpsuit. Was he being sarcastic? Mm-hmm. He seemed to be pointing at me, so I got to my feet and shuffled over to the shaven-headed camp guard. They dragged me in a shambling run to the interrogation centre. I was forced to kneel in front of a long table. guard stood on each side of me. What are you in here for? Excuse me? You're asking me? Answer the question. A boot was pressed down on the back of my bare feet. Foot. How the hell do I know? Don't use that tone with us. We have a job to do. There was some shuffling of papers and some whispered consultation. Have you ever criticized the free world? They looked at each other significantly. What do you understand by freedom? Let me out of this hellhole. That's what I understand. My two boots came down this time, hard, one on each foot.
Take it easy.
Answer the question, 70912. Look, at least let my wife and daughters out of the women's camp, for God's sake. How dare you bring the Almighty's name into this? There was a crunching sound as the boots stomped on my feet. I nearly blacked out with the pain, but the questioning went on relentlessly. Are you now or have you ever been a member of any environmental, anti-war, or other dangerous radical organization? Okay, take him away. Wait, I demand to see a lawyer. The interrogator laughed dryly. Subversives don't get to see lawyers.
What about my human rights?
You didn't stop to think about the rights of the ordinary decent citizen when you endangered their consumer happiness. Get him out of here. I was dragged back to the big cage and pushed into the rest of the orange clad men. They started to ask me questions, but his voice boomed from the loudspeakers. No talking. If there's any more talking, you'll all be hooded. Do you understand? We looked at each other and nodded. I noticed my toes wondering if they were broken and tried to make it out the women's camp in the distance. A few weeks later, they put in the implant. The operation itself was relatively painless, involving a hypodermic needle in my scalp and some sort of microchip or nanochip. They showed me the signal on the monitor, my number, 70912, and the logo, FFF, Fight for Freedom. They said everyone in the free world was to get one, by law. The New World Order depended on everyone being traceable and accountable. The whispered joke in the camp was that FFF really stood for Freedom Prize Forever. We got Freedom Prize at every meal. I watched the full wall TV as the leader of the free world stopped in mid-swing and posed nonchalantly with his golf club at a jaunty angle to one side, while the cameras flashed. The leader gave his usual impromptu pep talk, but now he's added a new twist. See, we've got to protect our freedom. Now we've got all the terrorists on the run, and we're smoking out the gays and the lesbians. We've got to deal with these ecology people. You know, these folk are a menace to our freedom. They're as dangerous as the terrorists. They prefer for everyone to hug trees and the whales than to be pumping gas. Now, watch this drive. I switched off the television as the leader's ball rose high in the air and he turned to the crowd with his two arms and golf club raised above his head. So, that was it. Environmentalists were the new target now that the war on terror was grinding mercilessly to a bloody end. For now, anyway. With heavy bombing raids all over the Middle East. The TV was one of the concessions in this hellhole, but there was only one channel available, the leader's favourite channel. It was like the food here. You could have whatever you wanted. These burgers, pizzas, spare ribs, coleslaw, Coca-Cola, ice cream, and freedom fries. Being a vegetarian, I had to make do with pizza, from which I removed the pepperoni. I noticed that people were beginning to look like Elvis Presley in his final days. The weekly re-education session was around once more, but there was a different feel to it when I walked into the room. Ah, sit yourself dying. Well, how's it going there, 70912? Sure, never better. I feel like a new man all through. Good man. And you've no complaints. Fuck, maybe you wouldn't just mind signing this wee piece of paper here then. Kieran Murphy, isn't it? Yes. Oh, just one thing. Could they leave off the pepperoni and maybe put on a bit more zucchini?
What?
Oh, your evening meal, is it? Sure, why not, man? Let's see what we can do tonight. Nothing else. Any word on my wife and daughters? They consulted their laptops and whispered amongst themselves. Re-education completed. All four have registered for training as Bible salesmen under the Orange Aid Scheme. Oh, good. You mean saleswomen? Salesmen, it says here. And they have renounced witchcraft, you'd be glad to hear. Oh, glory be. I see you have expressed an interest in going to Bible University, Kieran. You no longer believe in evolution, we take it. Oh, absolutely not. Work at the devil. Good man. Now, do Just another little formality. Fine here, three times. What is it? It's just a wee renunciation pledge. Lucifer knows machination. Second one right here. The goddess guy and all that pagan stuff. Oh, I sign here as well, Kieran, just in case. The papish error. No bother. Roll on the rapture, brother. Yes, roll on the rapture. Now, doesn't that feel better, Kieran? And isn't this wee country improved out of all recognition since the border was abolished? Oh, yeah. And we never knew what the work ethic was until you people showed us. That old Celtic tiger was in the hastening place, sure. And we're all letting bygones be bygones now, aren't we? Yes, yes. We're so grateful to you. And to the whole free world. Well, Dr. Murphy, I think we might have a nice job for you. I see you were an environmental consultant before you were led astray by those tree huggers. Yes, for which I'm truly sorry. I'm being led astray, I mean. And the first step was we can get you out of that orange jumpsuit, so we can, aye. Well, here I am, in my plush office at Intencom. That's short for International Environmental Commission. A large stack of environmental impact statements on my desk. All I have to do is sign off on them. This one shows clearly there'll be little or no damage from the development of new Arctic oil fields. It has a nicely argued appendix on the benefits of global warming. Oh, here's my darling wife with a nice cup of tea. Thank you, Fiona. You're welcome, dearest. How's the signing going? Oh, I should have them all finished by lunchtime. Then I thought perhaps we could grab a bite to eat some. Super burgers and cream fries. Excellent idea. Then a round of golf. Oh, good. The reliable old cholesterol buster. Shall we take your SUV, dear? No, I think I prefer your chopper today, dear. You only gave us... Oh, you are, Sophie. You're a Bible salesperson. What do you think of my latest pinstripe suit, Kieran? I feel so much more even in it than in a silly dress. Ah, but you look good in a dress, Fiona. I know, dearest, but that's for when I'm being a housewife. Okay, okay. And the girls, they're doing well. Sure, they all made a bundle on commission this month, and it's amazing. All three have met nice, clean-cut creatures who are the hot for them. Oh, such a coarse phrase, dear. Oh, sorry, Kieran, the devil just puts words in my mouth sometimes. Praise the Lord, Fiona. Yes, dearest, roll on the rapture. What a view over the Cork City Marina from our deluxe new apartment in Dockland. Now, time to zap on the news. Great round of golf we had. Must say, I have to take off my hat to that old geezer, John Thompson. He won, darn it. 75, and he's like a young goat. I wonder why Fiona thinks that now. Well, being main stockholder in corporate Thunder Inc. must be good for the old arteries. Now there's a chutzpah part for you. Corporate Thunder, what a name for a multinational. My musings are interrupted as the door opens. Aha, if it isn't the good Dr. Lara Vasilaya herself. Hello, Kieran. Fiona has not come back yet. She lent me her key and invited me over to dinner. No, not back yet. Still out golfing. Don't you just love this full wall TV, Lara? Oh, yes, with surround sound and smell-o-vision. Excellent. Okay, now this is interesting. Looks like they're getting rid of the last pockets of the Amazon rainforest. Oh, I just love the smell of napalm in the morning. Isn't that how it went? Ah, there goes the Mark II Agent Orange. Just look at it, Kieran, billing out there behind the choppers. Wow. Yes, keep those trees from growing back. New improved brand, with no nasty human deformities in the next generation. Now we'll see what the strip miners can come up with. Yes, Kieran. Now, you know they got the last of the coltan out of the Congo Basin, but there's always a big demand, especially with the new generation of video phones. The rest of the land in the Amazon Basin can be used for cattle ranches and coffee plantations with it. And let the merchants of doom and gloom go stew, she said. Oh, look, not another super hurricane. Ah, well, clear out those messy-looking caravans lowering the thorn in place. Don't those folk realize what their trashy trailers do to nearby property values, Kieran? I know, quite thoughtless of them, really. At least our residents' association on the West Coast Costa got together to put an end to those nasty caravans along the coast. Those people were stealing our grapes right off the vine. I heard it was Fiona who got the residents together, right, Kieran? Yes, Fiona doesn't tolerate any nonsense with her. So tell me, Kieran, you're not noticing any recent drop in summer temperatures down there on the coast of us? No, Lara. Oh, I know what you're talking about now. Those figures from the North Atlantic Monitoring Buoys, right? I know it's not something to get too concerned about, Kieran, but have you looked at the figures? Oh, come on, Lara. You're not buying into that old day after tomorrow gossip about the Gulf Stream stopping and the big freeze coming to Europe. No, I don't want to scaremonger. Anyway, Lara, if the worst case scenario did come about, we could always move Intencom's HQ to Barney, Singapore. Oh, I would miss Ireland, but then I suppose one tire economy is much the same as another, Kieran. Oh, look, Lara, on the TV, more action in the war on terrorism. Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition, as they say. Oh no, hell's bells. They're firing missiles at that nuclear plant in Kazakhstan. I know the place well. Darn it, Intencom warned the leadership about that. There must be some other way to deal with nuke plant hijackers. I suppose boys will be boys and they just have to play with their toys, no? Okay, action time. I'll use the video phone in your study. We better contact night shift at HQ. Put out an alert to the public. Get in, stay in, tune in. Won't be too serious in this neck of the woods, unlike where you come from, Lara. Over there it'll be, get under a table, roll up with your head between your legs. She laughed. And kiss your ass goodbye, she said. Good thing I emigrated to Ireland, eh? See you and Fiona later, Kieran. I'm picking up my new super SUV at the all-night motor mart. It's got the Geiger counter and the radiation filter. Handy, huh? A short while later, my wife comes into the office all aglow, and it's not from the effects of radiation. Hello, dearest. Working hard? Hello, Fiona. Did you have a nice second round with Mr. Corporate Thunder? Oh, yes. John is such an old swinger. His girlfriend? Yes, Kieran. Anything on the news? Another massive super hurricane in the Caribbean. Lots of tapes wiped out. Oh, well, that's nature for you, dearest. Red in tooth and claw. Is it any wonder the old Lord Almighty ordained that mankind's will should be imposed on nature? Indeed. Now, the survivors will need your free Orange 8 Bible, Fiona. Oh, yes. One door closed and another door opened. It was meant to be for those poor people here. The survivors will have a chance now of being among the chosen. Yes, dear. Oh, Lara was here. Back soon for dinner with us. She ditched that lady fellow she'd been dating. Oh, why? I'm surprised. He was a real Hungarian entrepreneur. Would have kept her in the lap of righteous luxury. And he's a lot of fun, too. Lara said he wasn't marital material. Too interested in those sailing trips we made on a big yacht down there in Copperhead. Yes, I was hoping for a trip sometime, she said. Well, you can get the details from her at dinner about her love life. Good, we'll have a nice gossip later while you're working on the final section of your book. You've been at that old thing for ages, Kieran. Yes, well, someone has to fill the gap after burned all those ecology books. Wasn't it great the way the Orange Aid program came to the rescue and funded your group to do the work? He said. Indeed, it's the Lord's work. Oh, by the way, take your iodine tablets, dear. The glass is some terrorist holding a nuclear power plant in Central Asia. Oh, that wasn't very clever, was it, dear? No, it was a pretty dumb thing to do. It seems the leadership didn't take our advice about that kind of stupid knee-jerk reaction. Suddenly, Fiona starts acting rather strangely, making faces and pointing at the wall. Kieran, I was just noticing something, a pattern on that new wallpaper that I had the servants put up. What about it, Fiona? That pattern, it makes the walls look they have ears. You know, Fiona, I get the feeling that politicians just see Intencom as some kind of rubber stamp. Pay lip service to it and then ignore it. Bloody idiots. Yes, dearest, bloody idiots. That's what those terrorists are if they think they can hold the free world to ransom. She puts her finger to her lips and makes a warning face. Dearest, how about a nice cup of tea? I'll get it to you. Oh, felt a little vibration. Yes, right there, where my chip implant is inserted. Darn it, I should have known. Someone told me the chip can pick up a combination of suspect keywords and then trigger a signal on the Big Brother supercomputer. I strayed quickly to the monitor. My number, 70912. My clearance rating, level B, with one more month's provisional. There's the FFS logo. And yes, there it is, the coded pulse. In the visit from the men in black. Hope to hell I don't end up back in an orange jumpsuit. My wife brings me the cup of tea. On the saucer, a little white card with a note scrawled on it. I look at it and this is what it says. It just clicked. SFF, transferred to numbers based on the position of the letters in the alphabet. Fiona looks at me and holds up her finger to her lips, a worried look on her face. I study the note again. Let's see. A, B, C, D, E, F, 5. My mind goes into a state of shock. Oh my God, it can't be. It is. Oh fuck. Holy shit. It's 666, the mark of beast.